It's Friday, January 29th. Are Americans going to wear two masks? Because a lot of them won't wear one. We start here. The most worrisome COVID variant yet has arrived in the U.S.
I don't think at this point I feel comfortable going in with just a single cloth mask anymore.
Why doctors are telling their families now is the time to double your precautions. Can't stop, game stop.
You're beating them at their own game.
So why do the most popular trading app shut down its own customers? And imagine a world in which you can't even buy a gas-powered car.
That includes full-size pickups and SUVs to be zero-emission vehicles by 2035.
America's biggest automaker says it's coming sooner than you think. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
We now have a new variant of the virus, and it's been both frustrating and alarming to see the speed with which the new variant is spreading.
For weeks, we heard about this mutated version of COVID-19 that was wreaking havoc on the United Kingdom. Now, there are lots of variants out there, but this one is even more contagious, so they were seeing it more and more and more.
We saw some countries banning travel. Do you think that it was too late at that point?
Absolutely. By the time a new variant is detected, it's already probably widespread.
Well, then it popped up here in the U.S. And a new COVID variant, people have said, is like a cockroach. If you see one, it's not alone.
We're hearing about multiple cases of the U.K. variant documented in New Jersey. And now we're hearing about a case in Montgomery County of a 30-year-old bartender.
It has been just a few weeks, and the U.S. has now recorded this variant in more than 300 cases. As we discussed, the good news is vaccines appear to work against this U.K. variant as well. The bad news is there are still more variants out there, each of them with their own genetic makeup, like the South African variant, which might spread even faster. The federal government acted quickly to ban travel from South Africa. Don't let it get here. Well, guess what? As of yesterday morning, it's arrived.
South African variant of the virus has now been found in two people in South Carolina. Neither had traveled and they had no connection to one another.
So what do you need to know about this and other forms of COVID-19? Dr. Ajish Jha is a dean at Brown University's School of Public Health. He's also an ABC News contributor. Dr. Jha, how dangerous is the South African version of COVID?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's clearly much more contagious, and it does look like our vaccines probably should still work against this variant, but may work a little less well. And that combination makes me concerned.
We'll already be on the road to being able to give people a boost that directs against the South African isolate.
The big thing that I think all of us have in the back of our mind is it possible that our vaccines won't work at all against this variant?
Right.
I think that's pretty unlikely. I think that's really unlikely. Those tests are being done right now. I think our vaccines will work, but they may work a little less well. And that has its own problems. That means some vaccinated people may still get infected. And that, of course, would not be happy news.
It will be months before everyone who wants a vaccine will be able to get one.
Some states like Washington cracking down, telling non-residents there's no vaccine for them. This man drove from Oklahoma to get one.
I set my mileage at 0 miles when I left. I drove almost 1,800 miles in 2.5 days.
Look, there's one thing we got to do right now. We got to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible, even if the vaccines are a little less effective. If a large chunk of high-risk people are vaccinated, it'll end up making an enormous difference.
Hey, and I want to ask you about vaccines in a second. First of all, if you're not vaccinated, is there anything to do? Like, I've seen people wearing two masks. Is that a real thing? Like, would you tell someone in your family, like, yeah, go for it, like, wear a second mask?
Yeah, so let's talk about this more contagious version, this one and the UK one, and what to do about masks. So I do believe we have to upgrade our masks. And I have upgraded mine in the last 6 weeks as I have watched these new variants. And the reason is really simple, right? These are more contagious. And so you have less margin for error with these variants. So what I'm doing is when I'm outside, when I'm out and about, I'm out walking my dog, I'm out walking with a friend, same mask, cloth mask, surgical mask, it doesn't matter. But when I go inside, if I'm going into a grocery store, I don't think at this point I feel comfortable going in with just a single cloth mask anymore. And so you have two choices. You can get a higher quality mask. N95s are hard to get. They're mostly for doctors and nurses. But you can get what's called a KF94 from South Korea. They are high quality masks. Or you can double mask, and there's good reason to believe that double masking can be helpful. What you do is you put on a surgical mask and then you put on a cloth mask on top of that. It's fine. It's fine to breathe. There's no problem with it. And it does create a better fit and better filtration.
But then why isn't the CDC saying what you're saying? They're saying, two masks, it's a lot.
Yeah, so CDC is trying to weigh a bunch of things, and I want to hear more details from them.
I have spent a reasonable amount of time in an N95 mask. They're hard to tolerate all day, every day. And in fact, when you really think about how well people will wear them, I worry that if we suggest or require that people wear N95s, they won't wear them all the time. They're very hard to breathe in when you wear them properly. They're very hard to
tolerate. But I think this is something that it's not my view alone. A lot of experts who are looking at this closely really do think that if you can't wear a high-quality, high-filtration mask like a KF94 or an N95, then you should consider a double mask in high-risk situations. Not everywhere, not every day, not all the time, but in those high-risk situations.
Hey, vaccines. There was one thing I wanted to ask. Like, we're about to see 7,000 healthcare workers invited to the Super Bowl next week. The reason it's supposedly okay is they're all vaccinated. Like, that was the big thing the NFL said. We're celebrating the vaccine here. So if you're vaccinated, come on, watch the game. But then you hear medical professionals say you could actually spread the virus even if you got the vaccine. So I guess I'm wondering what happens if a bunch of vaccinated people get together, if they shunned the non-vaccinated people and just went to we can't even go to a football game or something?
You know, I think there's a lot of confusion about vaccinated people and spreading of the virus. I mean, technically, we don't know to what extent vaccinated people spread the virus. But I think there's good reason to believe it's very little. That if you've been fully vaccinated, gotten both doses, the chances that you're going to be spreading the virus is not zero, but it's much, much lower.
I wanted to tell you that we want your team to be there. The 5 Waldemere unit to be our guests at the Super Bowl. I don't know if I don't know if that means you accept or not.
Yes.
We accept.
Oh my gosh.
It is. And so I do think that it's reasonable and pretty safe for vaccinated healthcare workers to get together.
The stadium in Tampa will operate at a third of the capacity. Masks and social distancing will be mandatory.
Again, I'd still be careful. I'd still wear a mask. I wouldn't. This is not like get together and have a big party indoors with 200 of your closest vaccinated friends. But I think the idea of sitting at a Super Bowl outside wearing a mask together is pretty safe.
All right, Dr. Zhao, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Next up on Start Here, take from the rich and halt the trading. Why Robinhood just infuriated the YOLO brokers after the break.
With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you were someone who bought shares of GameStop recently, yesterday morning you probably loaded up the New York Stock Exchange ticker and you strapped in for a wild ride. We talked about all this yesterday, but quick recap. So, Everyone on Wall Street has long assumed video game stores are done, right? They bet on companies like GameStop to fail, which is called shorting the stock. You get rich if the price goes down. Well, a bunch of solo internet traders get together on this subreddit called Wall Street Bets, and they start buying GameStop. There's a name for this. It's called a short squeeze, because if the price keeps going up, those dudes who shorted the stock are risking more and more and more. Well, this squeeze works. The price goes up, and eventually, a $13 billion hedge fund has to give up on shorting the stock. They take a huge loss, and guess what? That jacks up the price even further. Suddenly, everyone is on the party bus.
All right, friends, great news. The billionaires are crying again.
We're gonna save these dog companies from going bankrupt.
And remember, this is still GameStop. Like, this is not Tesla, it's not Amazon. No one thinks this company is about to do huge, great, revolutionary things. And yet, you've got people on apps like Robinhood smashing that button to buy more shares. Until yesterday.
Several online brokerages decided to restrict trading in companies like GameStop, effectively shutting out the little guys.
Instead, as Wall Street firms were crying foul,
the reason the market is doing what it's doing is people are sitting at home getting the checks from the government.
Robinhood and several other trading services tell their users, you're done trading GameStop. And you've got a lot of people right now sitting at home saying, regular people get hit by these kinds of runaway trains all the time, so why are you finally pumping the brakes on us now? Well, this group that has taken off, Wall Street Bets, we have the founder of it with us now. Jamie Rogozinski is with us. And Jamie, you no longer moderate this group on Reddit, right? Like, you were watching this chatter from afar, like a lot of people, but you can probably describe for me, like, who is in this group, what the makeup is at this point, right?
I mean, at this point, there's 5 million of them, so no. And, you know, they're a little bit of everything. You have these people that got a job and they're trying to make some money on the side, pay the bills, whatever, maybe play the lottery with it.
It's kind of almost like a game to me. I love to be up. You know, I get upset when I'm down, obviously.
You have some professionals with this that do know what they're doing, and they're deciding to take this new strategy that's never been tried before, the so-called meme stock approach.
Now, there's a forum I've mentioned before. Wall Street Bets. It's on Reddit. Now, a lot of younger people read Reddit. I read Reddit because younger people read it. That's why.
Look, if there's one thing that everyone wants to do, is, especially if they're starting to get in the stock market, is to make some money. So no matter what they are, where they come from, what their background is, whatever, they're probably just looking to make some money.
Well, and so there's people who want to make money and had thought of this sort of short squeeze play from a mile away and said, hey, if enough of us get together, we can make this happen. But I think it also seemed like there was kind of the satisfaction of, you know, this image of like a smug Wall Street trader who makes his money shorting companies, getting rich when those companies are finally driven into the ground, and saying, no, 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 you don't make money that way today, not with us.
It certainly has a poetic justice feel to it. You know, I think that a lot of people have historically frowned upon short sellers because they make the stock price go down. That hasn't always been the case. There's a lot of technicalities and mechanics as to how these things work. But certainly they're not the good guys, right? Why would you want to tank the price of a stock when the stock market is there to try and create value? And so I can see how they can be portrayed as the bad guys. I don't necessarily buy into that narrative, but I can understand why it exists there. And, you know, having these guys knock over a fund that was doing this in a super high profile manner is absolutely, you know, an unexpected win that they were getting. And I think that's why people that don't even care about the stock market are caring about it now. They remember those pickets from 2010.
The Occupy Wall Street movement is reaching a flashpoint.
They swarmed the streets trying to shut down the stock exchange, but it didn't quite work.
Please clear the street.
They remember all those campsites that were all over the country, and they're saying, finally, you know, this is what we were waiting for. So I can see that, and I can see how that's a, you know, an attractive story.
Oh, but like you could do that. But now you can do it without setting up a campsite, and perhaps you can make even more of an impact somehow.
Yeah, and you make money. Right? You're beating them at their own game.
The whole point of the stock market is that it goes up and down, and each share has their own risk and reward. So to say that one stock is too volatile to be traded, I think is unfair.
Will you tell Robinhood? What will you do as a result of all of this?
I will most definitely be taking my business to another brokerage once this is all over.
Well, and so let's talk about this move by Robinhood yesterday. They came in and said, look, the stock is still active on the New York Stock Exchange, but our users are not allowed to trade it today. Now, today, it looks like they are going to allow limited trades of GameStop, but the complaint, Jamie, has been, if you bought into a company long-term and a big short seller came in, you would see that stock draining away in front of your eyes. No one's coming in and stopping that short seller, but suddenly the little guy's doing well, Robinhood is clamping down, and by the way, Robinhood's whole MO is they're supposed to be empowering regular people to be traders, right?
That's why I don't think it was them. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I've been familiar with them since inception. I've seen them go through growing pains. I've seen them go through all sorts of different phases. I've seen that. Look, they used to advertise. I have, you know, I wrote a book on this, and I have a screenshot in this book of a few years ago where they were advertising on Facebook, and they had a picture of a street sign somewhere. You know, it must exist somewhere in the country that said YOLO. Right on the street, which is a common saying on Wall Street Bets, means you only live once, take chances.
I YOLO'd my account, put about 90% of what I have in Chewy for this option call.
And the caption on this thing was, earnings season is coming up. You know, don't miss out. Something to that effect. Earnings season, of course, being a time where you get crazy volatility, good opportunity for making trades and bets and gambling. So they bought into their own image.
Look at you. You always did things your way.
And they have all along. They have a very specific market, a very niche market.
Welcome to the future of investing.
They're not doing this for the dividends. They're not holding these stocks until, you know, they retire. They're playing. The interface has confetti animations when you buy stocks. It's a game. There's no logical reason why they woke up this morning. You know, this feels like the right move.
So you think what? You think they were pressured to do that by somebody else? What are you saying?
I do.
Huh. Well, and I should say then, the Robinhood CEO put out a series of tweets yesterday to users saying point blank, this decision was not made on the direction of any market maker we route to or other market participants. He said it was really about complying with SEC guidelines to reduce risk to their own investors. But it makes me wonder, does the culture of a group like Wall Street Bets, does this kind of crowd change everything about what we're going to see over the next 5 years with this stock market? Like, is there a new breed of trader out there?
The new breed is here. It's already here, right? We're seeing it just now.
Elon Musk tweeted GameStonk. Game over. GameStop to the moon.
Listen, you stop selling the stock.
There is a new category, and they're in town, and they're staying in town, and they're a force that is powerful enough to knock out hedge funds, and they've collectively gotten themselves a seat at this very elite poker table.
What is it? The SEC? They're not. What kind of case do they have? We like the stock. We like the stock. I mean, that's the case. Ryan Cohen got in. He bought 15% at $8. He's on the board. We like the stock.
They want to know if the stock is funny, if the CEO is charismatic, or he's got a Twitter account. That's worth just as much to a company these days as the product that they're selling. Is you know, people becoming meme stocks, and they buy them, and it matters. We had a situation when the pandemic started where people started buying Zoom, the video conferencing company, and lots of people made a mistake and they bought the wrong Zoom because the ticker symbol didn't add up, and they bought an unrelated company. They shot that price up inadvertently a lot. And the establishment said, you children, ha ha ha, you don't know what you're doing. You bought the wrong company. Those children that bought the wrong company made more money buying the wrong Zoom than had they bought the correct one. They took their money, they walked away, they said, you keep laughing at me as much as you want. Let's go buy Hertz that's bankrupt, because that'll probably go up too, right? Like, they're making fun of this whole entire thing, and they're making money, and that's the end game. That speaks much more volume than the way that you got to the end game.
Or like, if you get in low and you get out high, like, that's a profit. It doesn't matter if the company's good or not. And again, I guess you could imagine there are Wall Street traders who think exactly that way too. That said, Jamie, would you want to be one of these guys holding GameStop stock right now, or would you be running for the hills like, I'm going to get sued by somebody?
I don't have enough information to call. I'll tell you, I'm not involved in GameStop. No. I wouldn't be touching these things right now. I haven't for a long time. If I were the moderator on Wall Street Bets, I probably wouldn't recommend you being in these things either. There's no precedent for this. Nothing. I've seen short squeezes before. This is no longer a short squeeze. This is something new.
Right. And as for Robinhood, it's not clear whether they are actually facing issues with the SEC. They've claimed that. They've also reportedly had to open up big lines of credit to support all this additional risk. But even though they're being sued by these users who might have lost money because of these moves yesterday, companies like them usually have pretty wide latitude to make these decisions. We'll see how they wield that latitude today. Jamie Rogozinski, the man who started this forum to begin with. Thank you.
Yep, not a problem. Thank you for having me.
We talked just yesterday about this other big bet, this one by the Biden administration, that if they can get everyone on board with big sweeping changes to address climate change, it would be an economic driver like we've never seen.
Today, General Motors announced its plans to become completely carbon neutral by 2040. That means changing how their cars are produced and the fuel they use to operate.
Well, wouldn't you know, yesterday, the day after this big push from the White House, General Motors announces that by 2035, they won't make a single small car that relies on gasoline. As in, every regular-sized car in their lineup is about to be electric. Let's go to Detroit right now. Jamie LaRue is the General Motors beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. He knows this business inside and out. Jamie, how impactful was this announcement from GM?
Well, you know, the announcement was that General Motors is, and this is very important, they use the word aspiring, to have all their global new light-duty vehicles, that includes full-size pickups and SUVs, to be zero-emission vehicles by 2035.
We're taking actions so that we can eliminate tailpipe emissions by 2035.
That's important because by light-duty, they're talking about full-size pickup trucks as well as SUVs.
Yeah, can you explain that to me? So when they say zero emissions, that means what? No gasoline on board at all. This is not a hybrid that we're talking about.
Right. Zero emissions. It means there's no tailpipe. There's no emissions that come from the car. It's not your typical what people are used to in hybrids where there's a backup gasoline engine. No, these are fully propelled by either a battery that has to be plugged in and charged or hydrogen fuel cell. And hydrogen is something that you would replace almost like gasoline.
So then, like, from where you stand, as somebody who's been watching these companies in Detroit for a long time, how does this plan compare to what you've heard in the past from, you know, Ford and from other companies?
GM's been very ambitious from the get-go.
At General Motors, our vision for the future is a world with zero crashes, zero emissions, and zero congestion. The key to unlock that vision is electrification.
Efficiency is more than our mantra.
But let's remember, GM right now only sells one electric vehicle, and that's the Chevy Bolt.
All electric, all aboard.
Coming at the end of this year will be the next one, which will be the GMC Hummer electric pickup. And, you know, that one's not exactly a volume vehicle at $112,000. So, you know, it's an ambitious target, but they do have a ways to go to make it, you know, a volume play across all their brands for every pocketbook.
I was going to say, I hear skepticism in your voice when you use words like aspirational. What would actually have to happen for this to work? Because, like, you know, 2035, that's 14 years away. What would the roads, what would factories, what would cars have to look like for this to really be a thing where a company just doesn't make those old gas cars anymore?
I don't see it being a complete reality in 5 years. I think you may have more people in electric vehicles in 5 years than you do today, but I don't see that being the dominant vehicle across this country just because of, first, you've got the infrastructure concerns.
I never thought about driving one, but you still have to plug up. Where are you going to plug it up?
So as part of their plan, General Motors will add close to 3,000 fast chargers across the country by 2025 using renewable energy.
Where are these charging stations and how are they going to work? Do we have an electrical grid that can support it? Then you've got the price point. And even with a federal tax rebate, a brand new car is expensive to begin with. And a lot of people are being priced out of them even today as we speak.
We see American consumers switching to electric vehicles through rebates and incentives. And the residents of our cities and towns breathing cleaner air and fewer kids living with asthma.
I don't foresee even 5 years from now, you know, 50% of the population driving around in EVs. It'll be more than it is today, but I don't see it being a mass play yet.
And of course, clearly with the encouragement of this new White House as well. I'm sure that's not incidental in the timing of all this. All right, Jamie LaRue there in Detroit. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And one last thing. For decades, several deaths remained a mystery. Well, scientists say they were able to crack the case with help from Olaf.
Anna, I need to ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you want to build a snowman?
Yeah, that Olaf.
What?
So back in the 1950s, there was this gruesome tragedy in the Russian wilderness. 9 people were found frozen to death in really rough shape. At various times, people have thought they were murdered, maybe subjected to medical experiments. Several people suggested they were attacked by a Yeti. The simplest explanation was it was an avalanche. After all, this group apparently cut out this big section of snow to make a camp. But they were on a tiny incline, and we know that they were still alive 9 hours later. Well, that's when a Swiss researcher watched the movie Frozen.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight, not a footprint to be seen.
He was apparently so impressed with the visual effects, he went to Hollywood to meet the animators who inspired him to change his computer simulations for snow. When he looked at the Dyatlov Pass again, he realized an avalanche definitely caused this. There's this weird phenomenon known as a delayed slab avalanche where the snow can sit for hours, then whoosh. His research has now been highlighted by our partners at National Geographic. The only problem is, good luck telling this to Russian locals. Many did not trust the government explanations in 1959, and they don't trust them now. So the Yeti idea, they're not letting it go. Always remind you, Disney, the parent company of ABC. We even do disclaimers for snow. Start Here is produced by David Rind, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Trevor Hastings, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimble, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, Abe Velez, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Stephanie Pawlowski, Hannah DeMisi, Taylor Dunn, and Matt Knox. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.